Support for NPR podcasts comes from HBO, presenting the new dramatic series, In Treatment, Monday through Friday at 9:30 p.m.
This podcast is a production of KCRW and KCRW.com Santa Monica. If you enjoy this program, check out KCRW.com for more than 20 additional programs that you can podcast. Support comes from the fully employed MBA program at Pepperdine University's Grazia Deo School of Business and Management. For information, log on to bschool.pepperdine.edu.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, and prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, TV was already getting more and more into unscripted fare before the strike. Now, there's so much reality programming, it's unreal. We get the lay of the unscripted land with Joel McHale of E! Entertainment's show, The Soup. Plus, while most of the industry suffers, video games rock on. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Go nowhere, it's The Business from NPR. So, how are things going between Hollywood's writers and producers? Well, having previously dropped all demands that they be paid more than the 4 cents they currently get for each DVD, the writers last Tuesday also dropped a demand for jurisdiction over reality TV and animation work. And they promised not to picket next month's Grammy Awards. All this just to get to the point where both sides could say that they would, quote, begin informal discussions to determine if there is a basis for both parties to return to formal negotiations. They added, quote, both the AMPTP and the WGA have agreed to make no public comments about the informal discussions until those discussions have concluded. In other words, Hollywood's writers and producers aren't officially talking yet. They've only agreed to talk about restarting talks, and they won't be talking about those talks. At least they've stopped talking trash. Let's hope that the people crunching the contract numbers aren't the same geniuses that worked on the MPAA's 2005 piracy report. That study claimed that 44% of the movie business's domestic losses stemmed from movies downloaded illegally by college kids using the fat pipe they get for free at school. No, not that pipe. The internet pipe. There's even a bill pending in Congress that would force universities to take steps to prevent illegal downloads. But last week, the MPAA admitted that a, quote, human error had caused it to get the number wrong. It now blames college students for only about 15% of revenue lost. 44% to 15%? That'd be quite a drop in itself. But then Mark Luker of the campus IT group EduCause was quoted by the AP, saying that the MPAA is still overlooking that 80% of U.S. college students live off campus, and therefore wouldn't be using collegiate bandwidth to siphon off Hollywood product. Luker says that 3% is a more reasonable estimate for the revenue that might be lost to campus downloaders. Speaking of the net, the CBS-owned web radio site Last.fm announced that you can now play songs on your computer 3 times for free. You can't download the song, but you can subscribe to Last.fm and then stream it all you like. CBS would have let you stream the songs for free indefinitely if it weren't for the opposition of the record companies. You could understand why they'd object, since last year was a terrible one for them, and 2008 ain't looking much better. According to Billboard, even though Alicia Keys' new album, As I Am, stayed at number one for its 3rd week last week, it only sold 61,000 copies. That's near the historic low for a chart-topping disc. 300 million Americans. 61,000 copies. Ow. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later in the show, will video games save the music industry? But next, reality TV becomes TV's new reality. During the 1988 writer strike, the fledgling Fox Network took a gamble on a little reality show called Cops. The success of that show, now in its 20th season, has to haunt the writers currently on the picket line. The Writers Guild had hoped to get reality producers under their umbrella. Instead, while they've been out on strike, reality shows have been taking over TV, and they're doing respectable numbers. ABC's Wife Swap and Super Nanny earned higher Nielsen ratings than the new dramas they replaced. And Also Ran NBC has been revived by its current lineup of American Gladiators, The Biggest Loser, and Celebrity Apprentice. According to RealityShack.com, one of a slew of websites devoted to the genre, there are more than 100 reality shows currently on air. And still more new reality fare is on the way. Get ready for Secret Talents of the Stars, America's Top Dog, and Real Housewives of New York City. So, you ask with great trepidation, will your beloved scripted program return once the writer's strike is over? Hard to tell. They're more expensive, but scripted shows do have the advantage of bringing in higher advertising rates and extra bucks from international sales. It's tough to export reality shows because we've usually imported the format to begin with. No matter how you slice it, though, reality TV is becoming TV's new reality. To bring us all up to speed on this vast reality landscape, our producer Matt Holzman called in Joel McHale. He's the host of the E! Network show, The Soup, which, according to their website, dips into the festering petri dish of celeb culture and extracts choice chunks of hilarity.
Now, here's the host who watches it all for you, Joel McHale.
Joel McHale, welcome to the business.
Thank you for having me.
I want to just start by getting the lay of the land of reality TV, because I'm certainly no expert. And do you have a sense of how many reality shows?
Wait, you're not an expert? You work for public radio? That's weird.
I know. Strange, huh?
I'm
so busy watching Nova.
Right.
So how many reality shows? Do you have a sense of how many shows there are out there these days?
Well, I have DirecTV, and there are, I don't know how many channels, let's say 250, 200, somewhere around there. And I believe 150 of those show reality programming, maybe more. So I think it's somewhere around 6.9 million.
Of those 6.9 million shows that you've seen, obviously everyone knows about American Idol and everyone knows about Survivor. Give me an example of a couple of shows that may not be on our radar.
Pants Off, Dance Off. You ever watch that?
No, can't say
you don't
that
watch
I have.
Pants Off, Dance Off.
No.
Well, Pants Off, Dance Off, something that you might want to be on later, is people who choose their favorite music video, and they dance in front of them while taking their clothes off.
My name is Agent N. I'm 27 years old. I live in Hackensack, New Jersey. I'm a student, and I'm pantsing today because I'm an exhibitionist.
That's on the Fuse Network. And if you're the best person at taking their clothes off...
I haven't heard of the show, nor have I heard of the network.
Or the network.
Yeah, interesting. This is an American show.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And then you win $200 if you're really good at it.
Wow.
So that's one of my favorites.
Do you show clips of that on your show?
We have shown Pants Off, Dance Off, but you realize it has to be a fantastic Pants Off, Dance Off clip if it's going to make the show, because it really is just people stripping to their favorite songs.
Another example of a show. I don't know if you're going to be able to beat that, but...
Yeah, Pants Off, Dance Off's pretty good. The number of dating shows that MTV puts out is staggering. So I assume you've heard of Next and Date My Mom, which is no longer on the air.
No.
You never heard of Date My Mom?
No.
Oh, Date My Mom was great.
Wow.
I missed Date My Mom. I hope it comes back. It was where if you were interested in someone, that someone would go out with your mother and to see if they were okay for you.
Meet Patrick. He's looking for the girl of his dreams, and today he just might find her. But before he does, he'll have to date three moms. Patrick has no idea what their daughters look like. He'll only have his impressions of their moms to figure out who's hot and who's not.
Often the mom would end up making out with the person you're interested in, but, you know, whatever.
That's not true.
Yeah.
See, the Playboy Channel could do a version of that called Blank My Mom.
Playboy Channel actually did one called American Porn Star at one point.
Is that true?
That is true.
And people tried out to be porn stars.
And we got sent some clips, and we were like, "What could we possibly use from this? There's nothing we can show on television."
It seems like there's kind of a cyclical nature to these shows that, you know, one year it's all the fear-based shows.
And yeah, then they're eating different parts
exactly.
of large game.
And then, Bachelor shows.
Yeah.
And then any idea what happens? Just one show does so well that they then get copied?
Yeah, they're really spun off. For The Bachelor, for example, it was on ABC, was supposed to have this kind of air of regalness to it. And VH1 took that idea and turned it into Flavor of Love with Flava Flav. Did you see that one?
I know of it.
Which is basically Skank Bachelor. They just rolled away all the pomp and circumstance, and it is morally bankrupt wonderfulness for the soup.
I got to Temecula, and I got to the Wilson's Creek Winery, which was all finery, because I wanted to take the girls out to dinery and make the minery.
That spun I Love New York. That was one of the New York, which he had named a woman, was a jilted lover on Flavor of Love. She's had two of her own series, and now MTV just did Tila Tequila, A Shot at Love, where she is being wooed by men and women suitors.
So, have any of the spinoff shows or the, let's see, another network even just copying the show with their own version? Have they ever done as well as the original that you know?
I know the Flavor of Love and I Love New York were two of the highest rated shows in VH1 history, if not the two highest rated in history.
But that really can't compare to a network show, probably.
No,
but
that's true. I'm trying to think if there's been a Bachelor. I'm sure there has. No, I don't think it's done as well as The Bachelor. But I know that Flavor of Love did way better than The Surreal Life and Strange Love, which were the first shows where you met Flavor of Love. I can't believe this is sad. I know all this.
Well, listen, that's why we have you here.
Oh, but now you have Brett Michaels doing Rock of Love. You know Brett Michaels?
Mm-hmm.
Lead singer Poison?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got his own show, finding the perfect girlfriend for taking them out, on tour with his band, which we call, it's called Rock of Love. We've called it Skanks of Love, Venereal Diseases, or Rock of Venereal Diseases, Rock of Pelvic Inflammatory Disease. But it's really, you're lucky you don't watch a lot of it.
Yeah.
I'm doing the work for you.
That
show, Dirty Jobs?
Yes.
I'm the reality clip host of Dirty Jobs.
No, I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Believe me, I'm really grateful. Your show before you arrived there was actually called Talk Soup. And
yes.
Now it's Soup. The talk show used to be a mainstay of kind of, well, let's call it non-scripted television.
Yeah.
But not anymore. It seems like that has...
Yeah, and that's why Talk Soup was born out of... a response to talk shows, and there was a time, as you remember, when it was only talk shows on in the afternoon, and that's when Greg Kinnear, he got the show, and he really brought it. It got an Emmy when he was there, and it really was the first show that poked fun at other things on TV. And then talk shows just went way of the dodo bird, and that was that, because they just did not hold their... because the format was so kind of was so strict, all you could really do was go the way Springer went.
Well, my theory about the talk shows also is that they programmed them so badly, they created so many bad talk shows.
Yeah.
They just soured people to the idea of watching talk shows.
Yeah, and they caused problems like Jenny Jones's show.
If you're just joining us, the business producer Matt Holdsman is talking with Joel McHale, host of E! Entertainment's The Soup. The strike has caused an outbreak of reality TV, and Joel and his producers spend more time watching this stuff than they'd probably care to admit.
You think that there is a saturation point? You think that the American...
I would think so.
I mean, you're saying there are a gajillion...
There's already so much to choose from, but maybe, that's a good... What do you think?
My instinct would be that, yeah, there is a saturation point, but it doesn't seem like there is. I mean,
no.
I say that, and then it just keeps going on. And not only that, it seems like people would demand the high cost, high production value shows, but that doesn't seem to have anything to do with their success either.
All you need is Brett Michaels wearing a bandana telling some girl to get out of the hot tub.
Just to take off her tube top.
Because the number of people that I run into that you're one of the rare ones who does not see a lot of this stuff, but the number of people that I know that are like, oh yeah, my favorite movie is Dr. Strangelove and Lawrence of Arabia, and my favorite television shows are The Bad Girls Club. The number of people that enjoy both it seems to be pretty.
It's crossover. It's a demographic crossover that is very desirable.
Yeah.
To a network. You know, let's say they won't get. Let's say that people will not get sick of this stuff. We were talking earlier about talk shows, and one of the things that really hurt the talk shows was a couple of very bad incidents where people who were on the shows then left the show, and because of something that happened on the show, then committed a murder or
right,
whatever.
As we were talking about, like Jenny Jones.
Now, we have not heard of a situation where in a Fear Factor somebody falls off a bridge and gets his head smashed. A couple of those incidents, would that kill
off?
I
don't think so.
It's just a juggernaut.
It doesn't – maybe it would kill one show, but it wouldn't kill – it wouldn't kill the genre.
But wouldn't it put a high, would it not put a little higher scrutiny on what's? I mean, these shows are so. People know already that they franken edit everything, and the producers are manufacturing all the situation, and people don't seem to care.
Well, if you look at some that people don't care, and in fact, those shows that are even more edited and more manipulated, like The Hills or Laguna Beach. Which were two gigantic shows for MTV, which were supposedly reality shows, but it was all scripted, and no one cared that it was. I mean, that it was just fake.
The business producer Matt Holzman is talking about reality TV with Joel McHale, host of E! Entertainment's The Soup. Joel brought some of his favorite clips for us to dissect. Fair warning, they're not for the weak of heart.
Asked to executive produce, choreograph, design the clothing. And dolls for the Bratz movie. What am I supposed to do? This is not fair. I can't go with it.
You know you like that kid.
You guys, please, I'm trying to tell a goddamn story.
There we go.
I'm trying not to laugh, but...
It's hilarious.
So what are we hearing there?
Paula Abdul.
And what's the context?
Paula Abdul. she is... well, she had a show this year on Bravo. You followed her life.
What it was called?
Hey, Paula. And many times we'll go, Joel, why you're being mean to that person by making fun of them, by showing something like that. And then my response is she is the one that invited the cameras into her home. And she is the one that is being paid for this show. So, in that situation, I feel like we can, you know, take the gloves off because she decided to have this lunacy filmed. And I think she thought, well, if people see my life, I'll stop being accused of being crazy. And she comes off even more nuts.
I want to change my drink order.
What would you like?
Ideally, 70% lemonade, 20% punch, 10% Sprite. If they don't have fruit punch... Do like 85% lemonade and 15% Sprite.
All right.
If they don't have lemonade, do 85% punch and 15% Sprite. Or 7-Up.
The laughter was not on the TV show.
Those are the people in your audience.
Yeah. Right. That's Jeff Lewis, who hosts a show called Flipping Out. And he is a very well-known house flipper in Hollywood. And
he buys and fixes them up and flips them.
And he is self-admitted and he has been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder.
Siobhan, I apologize for calling you a slut. I shouldn't have done that. But I was a little angry. And I didn't mean like you're a slut like that. When I just get up and start yelling at a girl, that's one of the first words that comes out is you're a slut. You're a whore. You're a... Now, there's a bunch of other words that also that I say to girls just to make them pissed off. I just wanted to apologize because I called you a slut. So you can apologize for pouring water on me whenever you want.
I'm sorry.
Apology accepted. This was a good talk.
That's Isaac. He was by far our favorite Real World contestant ever and our Real World cast member ever. And he actually called me and left me a message and I felt pretty special because of that.
Was it a nice message?
Yeah, he was thanking us for saying he was. We called him like cast member of the year, like our greatest cast member ever, and he was very happy about it.
Is he missing any sense of irony there? Do you think?
My guess is that could be the case.
Joel, thanks for coming down.
Thank you for having me. You've given more legitimacy to The Soup than you can possibly imagine.
We do what we can.
You're listening to The Business from NPR. After a short break, video games rock on.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. The strike seems to be just the latest bad news for show business. DVD sales are flat, record revenue is plummeting, and the audience for broadcast TV is shrinking. But while traditional media struggles to adapt to the digital age, video game revenues were up a whopping 43% in 2007, fueled by mega hits like Halo 3 and the Nintendo Wii game console. A couple of months ago, we aired a story filed by Variety's video game expert, Ben Fritz, about how a major cable conglomerate is getting into the game and taking on one of the video game business's biggest franchises. The ensuing battle could be a boon for record labels.
The crowd cheers. The drummer starts the beat. Then the guitarist hits the opening chords. We're not in a rock club, but a soundproof demo room at MTV headquarters in Los Angeles. There are speakers everywhere, and on several big screens, a high-def virtual quartet is rocking out as colored notes fall in front of them. Watching the screen intently are two young video game producers, playing a scaled-down drum kit and guitar-like controller, guided by those colored notes.
So there's now a drum and a guitar lines at the bottom with different colors falling, telling them what to play, and the lyrics are on top, and the notes are going up and down to say what he should sing.
They're showing off Rock Band, the result of MTV's $200 million incursion into the video game industry. In a battle of the band games, MTV's new Rock Band is taking on Guitar Hero, the mega-hit franchise that sold more than 7 million units in the past 2 years. Guitar Hero is a brainchild of two MIT graduates who spent more than a decade trying to find a way to make music easier to play. Alex Rigopoulos was one of those students. He's now CEO of Harmonix, the company that designed Guitar Hero.
When we started the company, actually, we weren't thinking about video games at all. We were really just motivated to fix what we believe to be a problem in the world that needed fixing, which is that playing music is one of the most profoundly joyful experiences that life has to offer. And everybody feels this kind of innate urge to make music, and yet very few people actually get to have access to what it feels like.
After its first few music games didn't hit a chord with the public, Harmonix came up with a guitar-shaped video game controller combined with an addictive on-screen interface that's easy to learn and difficult to master. But the only publisher willing to take a risk on it was a small Northern California-based startup called Red Octane. Dusty Welch is now head of publishing for the company.
There were very low expectations both from retailers and I would say the gaming press, but retailers had begun to start selling out of the product and had begun to request multiple thousands upon thousands of units of the product as replenishment, to the delight, obviously, of the owners at Red Octane, who were at the time, I would say, pleasantly unprepared for the magnitude and the scale of what was to come for the product.
Despite the success of Guitar Hero, the band behind it broke up after a little more than a year. Red Octane, which owned the rights to the Guitar Hero name, was bought by Activision, one of the industry's biggest publishers. But Harmonix, the company that designed the software, was acquired by MTV.
Gaming is such an important part of our target audience at MTV that we had been looking and spending a lot of time thinking about what was the right kind of strategic plays in the gaming space.
Executive Vice President Jeff Yap says MTV understands that more and more of its audience are gamers.
The best place for MTV to make a significant investment in the gaming space was through music.
MTV isn't the only entertainment company making a play for video games. Both Disney and Warner Brothers, for instance, have been investing substantially in games. And Sony, maker of the PlayStation console, is an industry giant. But MTV made a huge splash by paying an astonishing $175 million to get Harmonix, the brains behind Guitar Hero, even though they didn't get the name. Harmonix co-founder and CEO Alex Rigopoulos.
That was the point at which actually we had finally had the resources to develop the game we had really been dreaming of for many, many years, which is Rock Band.
True to its name, Rock Band takes the Guitar Hero experience and adds drums and a microphone so that up to four people can play together in person or online.
The drumming gameplay, of course, is a major leap forward for us.
So you can see there's a big orange line that represents the kick pedal. And otherwise, the four pads represent both cymbals and drums. So right now,
with Rock Band, you don't just play like a rock star. You can look like one. Kind of. See, you create your own avatar, which is like a personal digital likeness, from an amazing number of options. Think expertly animated dress-up dolls and you'll kind of get the picture.
So some of the faces you can choose from, for example, I got the meathead up here. He's got a real big manly jaw, some 5 o'clock shadow. Here's baby face, very round face, big blue eyes, little pug nose. The Iron Man looks like he's been on a few gigs. He's got nice big cheekbones.
You can choose your eye color, hairstyles, even tattoos. As you tour with your band, you can acquire clothes, new instruments, and other rock accoutrements. And you can even share your band's music on the web, a la MySpace. In fact, both Guitar Hero and Rock Band have invested in sites that feature high scores, tournaments, and more. They want to turn their games into online social networking experiences that draw in players for hours each day and, incidentally, keep them from watching movies and TV. And that's not all. If the laws of the video game business hold, then sequels to Rock Band and Guitar Hero 3 will definitely be hitting shelves in 2008.
You can see many of the same franchises in the top 10 every single year.
Red Octane's Dusty Welch.
Whether that's Call of Duty, Tony Hawk, Need for Speed, Madden, to name several of them. And if you look back, you see that they're pretty consistent every year. And I think consumers have come to really demand a return of their favorite franchises and have the chance to enjoy and engage in that entertainment experience on an annual or even more frequent basis, unlike what you experience with movies.
While MTV and Activision duke it out now and in the future, there's one clear winner. That's the music industry. See, Guitar Hero 3 includes 71 songs by artists like the Rolling Stones, Guns N' Roses, and Pearl Jam, while Rock Band's playlist has 58 from the likes of The Police, R.E.M., and The Strokes. Both companies also plan to make hundreds more songs available for download in the next year, and the sagging music industry gets a royalty for every single one.
There's a pretty significant revenue stream that is going in to publishers, labels, to the artists, everyone that's involved, that they didn't anticipate.
As for the games themselves, Guitar Hero 3 Legends of Rock came out earlier this month and earned $115 million at $100 a pop in its first week, making it the second most successful video game launch of the year. The more expensive Rock Band just hit shelves last week. Only time will tell whether consumers prefer to be a Guitar Hero or form their own Rock Band, or whether there's enough room in the market for both games to prosper. But with two awesome music games out this month, I think I know what I'll be doing.
So are you guys ready to rock?
Yeah, let's
rock!
Do it!
Go!
Woo!
I got bass.
An update. According to the NPD Group, more than 1 million copies of Rock Band and 6.5 million copies of Guitar Hero have been sold in North America since they launched late last year. And that's great news for the record label. Players of the two games have purchased a combined 7.5 million songs online in that same period. And that's the business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.